Welcome to the MacCast. This is a podcast that strives to bring the church world and the art world at least a little closer together. My name is Matt Anderson. So glad you can join us today. Today is part two of my interview with Bill Wade. Bill is the founder and executive artistic director of Inlet Dance Theater, which has been in existence for 19 years. And he has a very unique perspective as a believer in Christ who is out in the midst of the art community among people that he would say are not yet believers. And I want to get more into his calling and how that plays out in his daily life in part two of my interview with Bill Wade.
So being in the art world, you're with... There's not that many believers that you're aware of in this world, but for I know for you, you would say I fit there more naturally than I would in most churches.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
But what do you think for anyone who's mainly been in the church world their whole life? Can you describe what that is like on a daily basis, being a believer in the midst of this mission field?
Yeah, so I mean, I get that I'm an outlier. I get it. I mean, the world tells me that constantly because I'm an artist for a living. And I get it even faster when I walk into churches. Once people start saying, oh, what do you do for a living? And I'm like, oh gosh, here we go. You know, I'm like, I kind of like don't want to go there. But it's culturally one of the first things people, oh, hi, nice to meet you. Are you new here? Yeah. You know, what do you do for a living? I'm like, I kind of came here to worship the Lord, but you know, so there's that. But what's interesting is once they start finding that out, then I'm like the unicorn in the room, or, you know, whatever pop culture phrase we're using now this week. But it's weird because I'm put into social situations in the church, large C, doesn't matter what denomination that I'm visiting or whatever. I feel very much like an outlier. I feel kind of weird saying it out loud.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, I've had long conversations with dear friends of mine who also do what I do for a living, and none of them live here. So I get to see them maybe once a year, about how we don't fit in the world because we're not of this world. And we actually kind of don't fit in the church because the church is behind in its education as far as performing arts is concerned.
Yeah.
And it's a weird place to be. I know that I also have the thick skin and the wiring. Like, we have this term, Mirkstapa, right? The outlier from Beowulf.
Right.
There's a
border
couple of...
Border
stalker. Yeah, right. So I have this weird picture in my head of, like, I'm one of those beings that was created to walk on that narrow path, and to my left is that land, and to my right is that land, and I'm the one that connects the two lands. And it's interesting. I was teaching. There are a lot of Christians who have become dancers in America now. When I was the age of my dancers in their 20s and 30s, when I was that age, I was one of less than five in the country. And it was a very lonely place to be. And I had a lot of well-meaning Christians who were, that goes back to that, you know, dance apologetics. Like, I knew the Lord called me to do this thing. And I knew that my boss in the dance company, Footpath, that I was in, was not a Christian at all. She was from New York City. She was not a warm, fuzzy person. You know, there's a lot there. It was kind of brutal. But I also knew that God put me there, and he was being very, very clear, and he was speaking to me through her, which was a weird experience. But then I'd always have to go home and, like, open up the word and be like, is that really you?
Yeah.
You know, and then it was. But
that makes sense, because you were saying earlier that most of those seismic things that have happened in your life have come through the words of people who don't know the Lord. But that's because that's who you're around 90% of the time.
Well, yeah, and that's who trained me. So, and what's interesting is now we have this, the church in America is in a very different place. There's a lot of churches that have dance schools. They have, like, liturgical dance groups and things. And what's interesting, because I'm in, like... So I was teaching at a camp for these folks. They love the Lord. They use dance to in worship and these things. And there's a smattering of us. There's like, you know, 60 people there. There's a smattering of us who are in the industry of, you know, performing arts. You know, we're talking about the ballet companies, the major modern dance companies. That those are my friends. And we're the faculty. And it was interesting because we had a conversation. It was the first time, and I've been going there for years, down to Houston for years, but we had a conversation where four of us sat on stools, and each of the four of us have a completely different calling on our lives. Mm. And my buddy Randall is a pastor, and he's an ordained pastor. He's a choreographer. He has a dance company, and they're all Christians. He's a missionary. He teaches for YWAM. He goes to Kona. He goes to China. He goes to Europe all the time. He is a missionary. That is his calling. That's the way his organization is structured. That's how they do what they do. These kids can dance. I mean, and this choreography is like mind-blowing. It's really, really good from an industry vantage point. Mm. I'm in the industry,
yeah,
you know, for a living, dancing for a living. And then, you know, my buddy Steve is, he was on one of the other stools. He has one foot firmly planted in the academia world of dance, which is a completely different mm-hmm. sphere of influence, mm-hmm. but also one in the marketplace because, you know, he danced for Martha Graham for 11 years. So, and then, you know, another friend of ours, Laura, was on a stool, and she's like this medical diva. Like, she just knows how the body works from a scientific. So she's very academic in her approach. But it was really interesting, and we kind of try to describe to all of these students sitting on the floor, here's him, this is his calling, this is what this looks like. And then I was like, okay, I'm the guy, like if you went into an art, I was like, how many of you have never walked into a real art museum? And I was astonished and very saddened by how many hands went up because all these people knew the Lord.
Wow.
And they've never been in an art museum. I was like, okay, that's kind of freaking me out right now. But that aside, imagine going into an art museum and you're looking at the sculptures and then they actually move and they come alive. Mm. That's my world. My whole world is there. And I was groomed for it. Like, I always thought I grew up really weird and I didn't fit in, da 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 da. And then, I read this non-Christian book by Malcolm Gladwell called Outliers. And all of a sudden, the Lord was like, this is what I've done for you. And the Lord, like, asset mapped my entire, you know, childhood and early adulthood. And I was like, oh, I get me now mm. in a way that I never did before. This is your plan all along. That's why I'm running this company. Duh. You know? And likewise for Steve and likewise for Laura. And it was really, really interesting. We had a lot of people come up later and they were like, I understand now that. And I was like, you know, in Hollywood is the entertainment industry, completely different part. Yeah, they're dancing, but trust me, it's very different than
right.
But God's got his people embedded there. Yes. I know a lot of them. And, you know, and I think that this reactionary kind of bunker mm. thing that we can do as Christians in America is actually any place that we abdicate, the counter kingdom's more than happy to mm. inhabit.
Yeah.
We need to stop doing that.
That's good.
Yeah.
I like that. You don't have to use names here. Can you give me an example just from your life when you've been able to sort of bring the God thing into a conversation with somebody in the industry?
Oh, yeah.
You know, because to me, those are a lot of the golden moments that...
Yeah, they're really awkward.
But sometimes they spring it on you, and they'll asking you a question.
Yeah, I'm thinking of one specific moment.
Okay.
we were performing at an outdoor thing in Tremont, and... it was a really bizarre week. There was a lot of, and it's in this neighborhood that's, you know, there's some dark stuff flying around that none of us can see with our eyes. You know, we're all there, we're like praying, we're doing our thing. And I remember the producer of the event, who's a friend of mine, theater guy. He was way back in the audience watching. We start performing and this huge storm comes in. I mean, stuff's blowing sideways and we're like one third of the way into the first piece, right? So we, you know, we were starting to perform. I remember we were doing ballistic.
Yes.
And you were there.
I was there.
And I remember him coming up to me, and because earlier in the week, you know, they, you know, weather patterns, we were like, this could be, you know, this might not go well. And we're like, you know, let's do this. And even an hour before, we were like looking. We're like, I'm warming up the dancers, and I'm looking at the sky, and I'm like,
Yeah, because it had rained, I think, throughout the day.
That day. Yeah. And then it stopped, and the sun sort of came out. It did. But then we live by the, you know, Lake Erie, so it's like, stick around 2 hours. It's going to change, which is what happened. And he walked up to me, and he's like, I thought you told me you prayed about this. He said, it looks like your God didn't answer you.
Wow.
And I turned around and looked at him. I'm like, or did he? Hmm. And he stood dead silent. I'm like, I'm going to take my dancers to a restaurant down the street. I'm gonna buy their dinners because they've worked all. It was the last event of our season that year, and that would have been a brutal. Remember?
Yeah.
We had a brutal performing season, and these folks were tired.
Oh, they were.
And I was like, what I prayed, and I didn't tell them this, but what I actually prayed was, Lord, if you want us to do this concert, it's gonna happen. If you don't, that's what's gonna happen. We started, and then the storm came, and I'm like, there's my answer, you know, and I'm just like that guy. It's like, I'm fine living with ambiguity. I mean, the Lord spoke, you know, and this guy didn't like it. He did not like my answer either.
Mm.
But to this day, we're really tight friends, and he's always looking at us with this, like, angle. Like, I don't get these people, you know. So I run into that a lot where somebody, like you said, they'll come to me. Here's the thing. In our industry, people don't behave as Christians who are living out the love one another, you know, thing.
Right.
That's just not what happens in my industry. So we come in.
It always cracks me up when Christians are surprised when non-Christians act like non-Christians.
I know. It's like, well, they don't know.
I'm like, that's kind of their jam.
That's their gig, yo. I mean, that's. So when we come in and we're like this family, and they can tell that we care about each other. And even at the end of concerts, like in the lobby afterwards, people are like, oh, my gosh, you can tell these people really care about each other. And topic of whatever the topic was on the evening. And sometimes we have several. And it's always interesting how, you know, people will hire us the first time, right, because of the skill set of the, you know, company and whatever. And but they'll hire us again, and they always point to who we are. Like right now, my emails are blowing up because, you know, as we're kind of re-emerging out of the pandemic,
right,
we're getting a lot of emails asking for help.
Mm.
And literally, dude, people from large institutions down to small ones that are emailing me right now are saying, I'm emailing you first, because I loved working with you guys. I really miss you. I've worked with some others. It didn't go so well. I can't deal with that on top of all of this pandemic stuff. I just need to work with people who are really good at their craft and are awesome people to work with. And that, I mean, they'll know that you are Christians by the love you have for one another.
Right.
And if you live that out, you don't have to hit people with the Bible.
Right. You don't have to quote the Romans Road or anything.
Right. Please don't.
Yeah.
Right.
The, you know, I have to tell you that I think one of the things that, and I was already a fan of the company from the first night I had seen them perform, but I think what really intrigued me, and I wasn't even living in Cleveland yet, but you guys had a special event on a Sunday afternoon called The Heart of Inlet. And you did it at Chagrin Falls High School, I think.
Yeah, the performing arts, yeah.
And there were some performances, but then there were testimonials.
Yes.
Of people who came up just to talk about, you know, what Inlet means to them. And I remember, I won't name him, but somebody who is...
It's the same guy.
I would say, it's so funny, influential in the artistic world of Cleveland.
Yeah.
And he came up and he said that... and, you know, and this guy, I'm not the Holy Spirit, but not a believer. So
No. I know that for a fact.
Yeah. So, but he said, when I work with Inlet, I know I'm going to get two things. I'm going to get one of the best performing artistic companies anywhere. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to work with the nicest people I've ever worked with.
Mm-hmm.
And when I sat there and I thought, someone who doesn't even associate with the Lord has that kind of a testimony.
Right.
I just thought, there's something here.
Yeah.
This is someone who is penetrating a world of people who will never come probably to my church. So
that's right.
Right.
Mm.
which is the point.
Yes.
I mean, that's
they're not coming to us. We got to meet them where they're at.
Exactly. And the Lord has given you the passion and the ability to do just that.
Jim Craig, Herb Brooks, Mike Aruzioni. Names associated with what may be the greatest moment in American sports history. But what if I told you that everything you thought you knew about the Miracle on Ice was wrong? What if I told you that there is another name, a name you have never heard, who should be mentioned in the same breath as the American Olympians? What if I told you that the Olympic semifinal against the Red Army turned on a simple ham sandwich? And what if I told you that our sports film series has officially run out of topics? 3000 for 30 presents the story of the 1980 Winter Games and Lake Placid's unsung hero. Not a defenseman or a coach or a forward, but an unknown concessioner who at the hockey arena may have unwittingly placed spoiled mayonnaise on a pregame sandwich given to Soviet goalie Vladislav Tretiak. The almost unbeatable goalie was pulled after one period that night after giving up two goals. Was it bad luck? Did he just have an off day? Or were there contaminated condiments involved? 3000 for 30 tracks down the rumors, violates privacy laws, and hacks personal emails. We interview parking attendants, Zamboni drivers, ushers, spokespeople for the Kraft Corporation, anything to fill time in an effort to find out who may have spread the love toward the Americans that magical night in 1980. The answers may be as disturbing as the mayo. Do you believe in Miracle Whip? Coming soon to 3000 for 30.
Finding that, by the way, I am finding that among younger folks, there seems to be younger Christians. I'm seeing a greater, you know, a greater passion for. Wait, there's more than one way to skin the fish, and there's a number of ways to do this kingdom thing. Mm-hmm. And so, why don't I start with what I'm passionate about and what I'm gifted with, mm-hmm. and maybe the Lord can use. And it may not. Now, obviously, God still calls people to be pastors and disciples within the church, which is
the Lord for that.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I did that for a while, but then, they're saying, well, it may not be in that building. There may be a different place for me.
Exactly.
And so that's why I think what you do and what Inlet does is such a lighthouse for people like that.
And actually, internally in the studio, we talk about being a lighthouse amidst the storm. It's like a thing. It's also interesting that, like, for example, I don't think a lot of people that are growing up in the church, for example, know the history of the architecture of the building that they sit in every Sunday and Wednesday night.
Yeah.
For example. That came from the theater in Greece. Huh. It's literally where it started, because Greek, like ancient theater, was most people were illiterate, so you would perform, you would do these performances to talk about the gods or whatever stuff, and you know they had a lot of them, and some people still do.
Pick a god, any god.
Yeah, it's just when it fits right, kind of like now. Right now, we're just taking bits and pieces of different ones and creating our own. That's the thing with postmodern America. But so it's interesting, like this whole idea of the pulpit and then the people here.
Right.
Like it literally has, architecturally, the history is in the theater.
Hmm.
So, and now my whole calling is in theaters, but it looks different. You know, we're performing things that we very prayerfully and mindfully think through making sure that what we're saying on this stage is coming from a biblical worldview, not even a cultural worldview, as like, you know, when people meet me, they see this middle-aged white dude. And but that's not how I feel about myself on the inside at all, because people don't know me, they don't know how I grew up. And I want to make sure that it's not even culturally specific, which is why for me, abstract art is a little bit safer, actually, because it's not necessarily culturally specific. Does it make sense?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because then you get rid of the red, yellow, black, and white of it all, and the us and them thing. And, you know, sometimes the dancers are painted, like you can't even, you know, can't tell.
Right.
So I'm finding that, you know, actually being in the abstract art world, it's a wide open field. And people are hungry for solutions. They're hungry for the connection that they see, which is, you know, why we have kind of a strong audience base, right?
Definitely. I'm sure from time to time you have younger folks who approach you, and because this is more, you know, even more than this is the whole you, I'll put it in a very economic term, you started a business.
Yeah.
You know, there's there's that whole thing.
There's
And so you'll have students who know all that about you.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever have people approach you and say, I want to do what you do, whether that's a choreographer or whether that's I want to start my own company or start my own artistic venture. What do you say to them if they ask you that question?
Well, there's things that I say to myself when I hear that, and there's things I say to them later.
It almost, isn't it funny? It's probably almost how God feels in a way.
When
we go to him with our, dude, like, God, I think I'm supposed to do a blah, 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 you know? And of course he knows all things, but there's probably a part of him that kind of chuckles.
Yeah. I mean, there's some like, okay, I'm not going to name this person. I just got a resume from somebody who's like, I really like this company. I like what I see happening. And I have no idea what the, you know, if this person has a faith they follow or whatever. Because that's not usually where it starts, right? Mm-hmm. And so this person is like, you know, I want to run my own company one day. And I'm reading this. I'm like, no, you don't. You don't even know what you just said.
I do the same thing.
I'm sure.
I do the same thing when people come up to me and say, and I'm like, you better get a burning bush and an angelic visit.
Throw a whole bunch of fleece out there and start praying for the morning.
It better be the Lord, because this ain't easy.
No. My wife, on occasion, gets to a place where she's like, why? You should do something else for a living. And I'm like, if I didn't know that I knew the Lord was like, at this point, this is about obedience. Mm. You know, I'm done like wrestling this stuff out. This is obedience. If the Lord tells me to stop and drop and roll in new direction, that's when I'll do that. But right now, I ain't doing that. Like, it's so much safer to just stay in the place of obedience, right?
Yeah.
And I wasn't when I was younger, and I learned the hard way. And if this wasn't a calling, if I wasn't for sure, and I ask them all the time to, like, confirm it again.
Sure.
Because, stuff is rough, dude. So I just want to make sure that it's him leading, and as long as it is, I'm good. You know, I just, it's not easy. It is a calling. And I feel like younger people who have more energy and they kind of idealize or you're really good with words, like where they make up fantasy about what it could be like. And
yeah,
what do you call that? Romanticize.
Yeah.
What that is. And I'm on this other side, like, no.
Yeah. Or I think what appeals to them a lot is they want to be their own boss and they don't want someone else telling them what to do.
Yeah, there's that.
Which, again, that can be a God thing that he's given you, but you might have to work for somebody first just to almost realize.
Oh, hello. That's the pattern, right? Look at scripture.
It really should be.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah.
It really
should be. Oh, man. If you want
to
be.
Sometimes you got to learn how not to do it before you know how to do it.
Well, absolutely. And I think that
which you live down in the dance world.
Oh,
holy
dude.
Cow.
Oh, my
That's
gosh.
How you formed your mission.
Right.
Yes. Right. Because you saw all these companies who were using people.
Oh, my gosh.
To elevate the genre of dance.
Yeah.
And people were expendable and they were just replaceable and it didn't matter. If you got hurt, you're out. We don't care about you. Who's next?
Absolutely. Well, it's like the NFL or the NBA, right? But, sure. But without the cash flow.
Sure.
Right. Right. And you don't mind if you're a millionaire and then you get traded and you got nothing.
Right.
But at least you got some, you know, some cash in the bank or whatever. Dancers are just like broke and then you get broker, you know, right. And then physically broke when you're older. And it's rough. So it is, to me, it's like, if this is not a calling, run the other way.
Right.
Do something else.
That, I think that's so scriptural. It's almost, you know, the story in scripture, you think about the guy who walks up to Jesus, I'll follow you wherever you go. And the Lord starts to say, okay, well, and he starts to...
Here's what we need to do.
Yeah. So, and then the guy starts giving excuses on why he can't do it. Because, you know, you're absolutely right. There's a glorification of all that, but it really is maybe once every 2 years you get recognized for something. And so what do you do in the other,
or 10.
You know, 700 days,
yeah,
you know, during those 2 years? And you're right. It absolutely has to be the Lord thing. Because if it is, the desire is there and the passion is there as well.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's almost the only thing that takes you through.
It's also weird. Like, don't you find that, like, the Lord will allow you to go to a place where you hate it and you want to give it up?
Mm.
Because, especially for men, I think we take a lot of our identity out of what we do.
Oh.
It's kind of culturally, it's not like necessarily our fault. We've been raised in a culture where that's like the thing. And what's interesting is there's so many different times where I've gotten to this place with dance, like, I need to quit all of this stuff. I'm done. I'm sick and tired of it. I hate it. But I had to get to this place where I was willing to put it on the altar and say, okay, what do you want me to do instead? And those have been pivotal moments because the Lord gave the desire back to me, but redirected or redefined the how and the why, particularly the why first, and then the what and how kind of follow that.
Yeah.
And, but there's been some key significant kind of, you know, directional changes. You know, my career is like 37 years or whatever. I don't know. Over 30 years.
There
and there's been some, you know, if you watched, it was weird listening to you read, you know, the intro.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that sounds like somebody else's life, man.
Yeah.
But it's interesting that you'll, as particularly as a creative, I think that we get so impassioned by what we're doing that every once in a while, we may be called to, are you willing to put that on the altar? And you get to a place where you have to say yes and actually mean it.
Yeah.
With knowing, like, I might not ever do this again, and am I okay with that?
Mm.
As long as I can stay in the place of obedience. Those are really hard moments. But man, what opens up on the other side of that is...
Well, you've just summed up, because you don't know this. I've already recorded some podcasts. They haven't aired yet. But by the time they hear this, though, I'm doing a 3-week series on identity. And this summarizes it so beautifully.
How funny.
And almost every great biblical character had moments like you were talking about.
Oh, yeah.
They wanted to quit. They were just like, get me out of this.
Yeah, they're in there.
I am not the man for this, you know, whatever. And so for anyone who is leading something, and that's pastors too, by the way.
Oh, my gosh.
just to recognize how normal that is. I hope you recognize how normal that is. And because obviously the enemy will play on that and say, well, see, you must not be called because look how you shouldn't even be asking questions like that.
Right.
But
right.
Really, that is the measure of honestly great leaders and people who make differences.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
In lives.
Well, and also if you can like get yourself out of the way, your ego, a little ego.
Yeah.
The almighty me, which is in American culture, that's like you're going to have to battle that at first, I think. Getting the almighty me and my dreams and my vision for me, and we're in the insta selfie world, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know what, it's not about you.
Mm.
You know, and it's like I've read my bio because I had to like redo it for the website recently. And I'm like reading it, it feels like somebody else's life. I'm like, yeah, I was at the White House, I remember that. I was nervous wreck. I do remember getting this award and, you know, whatever thing. And those were always used. I always felt really awkward because I'm like, why am I getting this when I know there's so many people involved in this thing that, you know, might be my fault because they started it, but but there's all these other people involved. And it's like, well, okay, I'm going to say yes on behalf of basically the Lord and what the Lord is allowing me to watch him do through my life. And it's like, sometimes it feels like you're being used as a conduit, but other times it's like, if I'm honest, I feel like I'm, like you get this image of this conduit, right? Sometimes I feel like it's coming through me as a conduit. Sometimes I feel like I'm standing next to the conduit and I'm literally just being allowed to watch it happen.
Yeah.
I don't even feel like I'm necessarily involved. I mean, there's been some examples in the theater where I was thinking about this. I don't know why I was thinking about this piece on the way down here. We had this piece in 2008 when all the, you know, economics bottomed out in America. So many people, Christians and non-Christians, lost their homes and their businesses and all this drama. And it was really funny because I had some very, very dear friends of mine who are really wise in the Lord, and they lost everything, and they were the most generative, giving people during everything that they lost. And it kind of freaked me out a little bit. And they were on the board. And what was interesting is I had to like work through that in my head, right? So I created a piece called Beauty and Tension. And I didn't realize it because the dancers never said anything, but they're underneath this fabric that's stretching like almost the whole piece until the very, very end, where they're using that same fabric as devices to fly in the air. Mm. And by the end of the, you know, the beginning of the piece, the fabric's really, really dark. And at the end, it's all white and, you know, a little trite, but it worked. And I remember an opening night. I was still in my headspace of like trying to make this piece work and these moments and da-da-da. I, honest to goodness, I was up in the sound booth. You know how that sound booth is back behind the audience, right? And I'm standing up there and I'm watching them go through this piece. And then the second it was over, there's like silence, which I'm used to because it's usually just us in the studio or in the theater at first. But then the audience like freaked out and stood up and cheered, and it was like a standing ovation. I literally, for a split second, forgot they were there. Hmm. And it kind of freaked me out. And we talked about it the next morning when we came back to the theater and warm up their bodies, and they were so sore and whatever. And the dancers said, you know, that was a really bizarre experience for us. I'm like, we talking about the standing ovation? I'm like, yes. That freaked you out. Here's the thing that freaked us out. We've never seen the piece. We're under fabric the whole time. That put us in a trust situation with you as our leader that we didn't see coming.
Hmm.
And I'm like, you guys never, we've been working on this for months and you never said anything. And Dominic was like, well, you're the choreographer and you've been doing it for a living for a long time. So, well, you know, just trust the man. He knows what he's doing. Hmm. He gets standing ovations all the time. So, you know. Just because you can't see the piece doesn't mean the piece isn't working. And then I was like, isn't that like the Lord in our lives with us?
Mm.
Right? I was like, holy crap. Like, I might not even be aware of how much spiritual impact, not outputs, outcomes, but impact, which is much later down the line, in the world of nonprofit speak. You know, the dancers in my company are my impact. A lot of them have been with me for over 10 years. That's where you start to measure true impact. Like for a church, 10 years later is the impact. Where are those people and how are they living their lives and how are they doing with the Lord and all of that stuff? So it's, you know, if you stick with your calling long enough and you just keep learning and you stay voraciously learning and listening, live listening, and allow the Lord to just morph you. We are his artwork made in his image. And, you know, I'm just doing that with their bodies in space. And it's interesting how, if we really just stay inside of that and keep ourselves out of the way, you'll have those. And that was one of those experiences where I felt like I was sitting next to the conduit. I wasn't even being the conduit in that moment. I hadn't even realized the dancers never even got to see the piece because they were underneath the fabric the whole time. And the audience stood up. And it was like, oh my gosh, it was such a shocking, jarring moment. But it was such a solid word picture for me, from the Lord to me and my life, on my trusting him with this whole career path that doesn't make sense to people in the world. And it certainly doesn't make sense to people that are Christians because they don't do liturgical dance. I'm in the theater. You know, my work is for Babylonians. Mm-hmm. Somebody literally said that to me once. I was like, wow, that was very self-revealing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bill White, thank you.
Yeah, dude.
It's great talking with you.
It's fun.
Thanks for being here.
Well, I hope you were truly blessed by that interview, just a very life-giving interview with Bill Wade. Hopefully it's awakened some things within you or has just reaffirmed what God has called you to. We appreciate you being a part of the MacCast. Our music is by Sound of Fusion. We hope to see you again soon. This has been a production of Monumental Ministries. If you want more info about our books or resources, go to mattministry.com. Thanks for having me over. I had a wonderful time.